I don't think I've seen a sequel since Godfather 2. I'm being serious.
This is The Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody.
Pardon it.
Here's your host, Greg Cody.
All right, Rohan is here.
All right, how you doing?
I'm great, Greg. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Long time no see.
It's been a minute. It's been a minute.
It has, yeah. I've been reading, enjoying your Twitter stuff lately and all that. And
is it his sports knowledge or his like random life takes on Twitter? What are we talking about here?
I'm always into the random life takes.
There we go. Okay, so you understand what I'm saying, that when a sandwich is cut slightly, not perfectly in half, and you eat the bigger half second, it's like you're eating more sandwich.
You're cutting right to it here, no pun intended.
But then when you eat the small half first, you're not feeling like a little bit cheated, or
it's because the first half of the sandwich is the smaller half is half of an entirely different sandwich. Like you're eating half a sandwich, and then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, I got a bigger half. This must be from a different sandwich. It's just kind of how I always thought about it in my mind.
Have you ever played the game where you're splitting a sandwich with someone and you're trying to make sure you get the bigger half?
my entire life I've been playing that game.
That is a dangerous game. Like, at least with my wife, it's like an accepted thing. Like, daddy's getting the bigger half. You know, look at this gut. Look at this gut I need to feed.
Yeah, but, right.
With like a friend, it's always it's like an unspoken thing. Like, oh, do you care which one? I'll take this one.
Yeah. With a friend, I'm willing to be more, I'll take the smaller half. Oh, yeah. It's with my brother where I'm like, if I'm not, that's when it gets really competitive.
Okay, but here's the question. What if, and this could very easily happen, what if the noticeably bigger half has noticeably less meat in it? Hmm. Like the smaller half.
Oh, like it, because sometimes it tapers off at the end.
Yes.
So just more bread. This is not the bigger half then. This is the lesser half.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah.
Okay. So when you're in the sub shop, do you ask them, could you please make the two sides a little bit off center?
No, he doesn't. No, he's.
I don't. But believe me that every time I get one cut perfectly in half, in my mind, I'm thinking I should have asked them. That's how deranged I am. Because I haven't considered asking them in the moment, but anytime I get one that I don't know which half to start with, in that moment, I'm like, I wish I'd asked them.
I think I like the bigger half first because I'm like worried that I'm not going to eat the whole second half. And for some reason, I feel better about leaving a smaller piece. Like, I don't know what I'm doing there, but I think I tend to go for the bigger half first.
I've never not eaten a full sandwich in my life.
I love how you just scoff at the idea.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Wow. I respect
That's
it.
True. You're,
I mean, I'm deeply unhealthy, but yeah.
I'm an appetizer guy. So I always I can't not have, I need a little something first. So
have either of you guys ever engaged in anarchy by eating the sandwich from the middle? In other words, eat it from one end, you eat it,
you turn it, you turn the sub.
Exactly.
This is
like a burrito, like the middle. Like, I've seen someone do that with a burrito before. It was like the most disturbing thing ever.
The only time I'll do it, if it's to kind of redistribute the toppings more evenly, sometimes that helps. There was a Subway or a Burger King commercial where someone did that once. And I feel like I'm the only person in the world who remembers it, but there's like a Burger King commercial where someone turns the original chicken sandwich on its side.
Oh, I love that sandwich.
Yeah, that's such a good sandwich. Yeah. When you were a kid, that was like the biggest sandwich in the world.
Yes, it was.
I loved it.
Yeah, it's so good. And they turn it and eat it. And I'm like, that's how you're supposed to eat it? Like, what? That's crazy.
Sometimes like the way like the accoutrements to the sandwich are overflowing out of the sandwich, you can't pass up on this opportunity. You're like, this is the perfect bite right there in the middle. I have to sacrifice the rest of the sandwich for this one bite.
Exactly.
Well, I want to share my my big sandwich pet peeve, and I wonder if you guys have any. Particularly, you find this when you go to a deli.
Welcome to the Greg Cody Show, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. To say this is a dream come true, I'm not even joking. first of all, congratulations to both of you. Like, I love it's, I can't remember who I was talking to recently, but it was, someone else from South Florida. And I mean, I just remember like 10 or 11 years ago, like listening to the Lebertard show every day, listening to when Greg was on and seeing what it is now. Like, I don't even know how you'd begin to describe it to someone. It's crazy. Like, you guys are killing it, man. I'm so happy for you guys.
It is crazy how it's been a wild ride.
Cody, I was just telling someone, I was in the car with a friend this morning and I was telling him I was doing this and he's like, oh, that's so cool. And I was like, yeah. And I was like, Chris, your dad, when I was a Herald intern, we were sitting next to each other at the Marlins game. And I was telling him, I was like, oh, I love when you're on the show. It's so much fun. And he's like, why don't you come down to the studio tomorrow? And I was like, are you serious? That's like, to this day, in terms of like,
I remember that. Was I there? I think I remember that. Yeah.
No. This was really back in the day. This was like 2011. Yeah. Cause this was like the old, like tiny studio.
I was there at the very end of that. I've seen that sad studio. Not that it's sad, but like it was right next to like the Pleasure Emporium.
Yes. And to this day, like in terms of like cool things I've gotten to do because of this industry, that's right at the top for me, you know?
Well, I'm thrilled to do stuff like that. And you've blown up. I mean, you're doing great now. You're a writer, mm-hmm. NBA writer, right?
That's right.
Sports Illustrated. What
are you going to introduce him, or do people just need to see it? And I mean, everyone knows who he is, but I'm just saying, like, you know, I just like to tease my dad about not setting up the show.
We were going to introduce him in the intro and everything. So mm-hmm. by the time you're listening to this, he will have already been introduced.
We jumped right into sandwiches. Okay. Yeah.
No, this is the start of the show, Dad.
Yeah, it is.
Well, that's
it
the important start of the stuff. Show.
Like, this.
No, Rohan Nadkarni was. You were an intern, right?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
And when were you an intern from when to when at the Miami Herald?
It was the summer of 2012, which was when I started, and I interned that entire summer. And then I was like kind of on and off freelancing, doing some stuff for the Herald for the next couple of years. So, but that summer was when you and I, I remember we were at a few Marlins games and some Heat stuff together. So that was when we met, but
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was cool. I remember those days. And I remember back in the day, when I used to smoke cigars way too much cigar smoking.
I was going to say, I hope you didn't stop entirely.
Well, I not entirely. I probably smoke two cigars a year now.
Oh my God. That's crazy.
Yeah. Cause I had, in late 2018, I had pretty major surgery and it's a lung issue and blah, blah, blah. And
of course.
So he's old. He's old.
Chris, are you like
Alishu?
Chris, how aware are you of the cigar smoking culture at the Miami Herald in the 2000s?
Not very aware. I mean, I know that you two have like met up for cigars, but I didn't know that it was like a Herald wide thing.
Okay, so first of all, one of the days I went to the office, the old sports editor, who I think safe to say Greg and I both love, George Rojas, an absolute legend in the Miami media scene. He taught me how to order Cuban cigars illegally online. He like walked me through the whole process. Then he's like, let me show you something. And he walked me to his car and pulled out this like unmarked white envelope. And he's like, these are my Cubans. Your dad was like, do you smoke cigars? And I was like, yeah, of course. Never smoked a cigar in my life.
I was going to say, that's a heady play by you.
Yes.
You just got to act like you're ready. Yeah, you got to fit in there. You got to fit in.
I had never smoked a cigar in my life. And we met up and smoked a cigar. I had to sit in my car for 30 minutes after because I couldn't go home. I couldn't drive home right away. Yeah.
Wow. I don't think I ever knew that.
Yeah. No, that's true.
I assume that when we met for cigars, you were like a young veteran smoker.
No.
See, look, the man's drinking coffee right now. Like next time, just meet up for coffee, right? It's more both of your speeds now, I'd say.
I think so. That sounds about right.
Well, I have my coffee right now adorned with the Greg Cody Show podcast decal. So.
What about that? Look at that. So, looking good.
So we're good.
Oh, God. You're self-promoting? No way.
The decal.
Rohan. I want to know, though, about these, because my dad is notorious. Like, we make fun of him all the time on this show for being just being very socially awkward.
I'm well aware.
So I want you to give me the good stuff. He doesn't care. Make him feel awkward. Was my dad ever, like, just, like, an old man, like, awkward in front of you?
I really hate to, like, embarrass both of you like this, but I was such a journalism nerd in the early 2010s that I was like, I'm hanging out with Greg Cody. Like, this is so cool. I will say that he was also, like, I would say he was known at like the cigar bar we'd go to. First of all, every time we went there, we were the only two people in there. We went there probably.
That's why it's no longer with us, by the way.
Yeah, it no longer open. We probably went there three or four times over the course of 3 or 4 years. Like they were like, oh, like Mr. Like he was on like a welcome back status. And then obviously, like, you know, in journalism context, like when I remember we were sitting at that Marlins game, like he was by far, including the players on the field, the most important person at that Marlins game. So it's funny because I only ever saw him in the context of like him being Greg Cody, you know, this guy who's been around Miami for so long, which is why I especially get a kick out of the show.
This is why my dad right now is thinking, see, if it wasn't for this damn show, I would have some respect. People yeah, respected exactly, me before exactly. this show. Look what this show and the Levitard show have done to me.
Yeah, it's a sacrifice. No question about it. I mean, you know, it started with...
But Dad, you are who you are. Dad, you are who you are.
It is what it is, as another famous person once said. But the whole hard network out thing began to paint me as this doofus who just...
Yeah, it's just the hard network out. Yep, that's it. That's all it was.
Well, I mean...
Yes.
it's worth it. It's a yin and a yang, whatever that expression is.
Pays the bills. Pays the bills.
It does pay the bills. So, Rohan... tell us what you're up to now. Do you travel a lot on this NBA beat?
Every now and then. I mean, obviously, since the pandemic started, that has been a little bit different. I'm very fortunate, you know, in my job. I just want to say, once again, in all seriousness, the respect I have for, you know, back in the day, it wasn't just Greg. It was Dan Lebatard. I mean, those were my two people I would read every single day. I mean, literally come home from middle school, go on the Herald's website and see if Dan and Greg had written anything, you know. Greg, I'd read his blog every day. Huge inspirations for my writing. And I like can't stress enough how much respect and admiration and love I have for local journalism. Not that you guys are just local guys, obviously, but how important it is. And the reason I bring that up is I'm very fortunate in that when I do travel, I really just get to parachute in somewhere. The red carpet has been laid out for me and I have 3 or 4 days. I know who I'm interviewing. I know when I'm interviewing them. I'm getting such great access, and it's such a blessing to be part of Sports Illustrated for that. So I don't travel a ton. I'm not constantly moving around the country, but for me, I have the benefit of it gets to be very targeted. I know that I'm interviewing Chris Paul in Oklahoma City, and I have 5 days there. And then, I know I'm doing the Nuggets front office, and I have 4 days in Denver. So for me, it's not a lot of travel, but when I do it, it's kind of very focused, and there's a lot on the docket.
What's your process for like, okay, I got to write something this week. Like, are you checking Twitter? Are you just watching the game? Like, what's your, if you don't have something that you really want to write, like what's your process for kind of figuring out what you want to write?
That's a really good question. Cause it is, I'm not going to pretend like I have a difficult job, but it is a little bit like, you know, you want something fresh every week. You don't want anyone to feel cheated if they read something. I think for me, it's a combination of what just sounds fun right now. Like if I don't have a great idea or I don't have a great motivation, like what just sounds fun right now? What's something that I would be literally having a conversation with one of my colleagues about? Like I wrote about, I think, MVP candidates this week, which is not like groundbreaking stuff, but it was just something I've been talking about with other basketball people, right? So that's a big part of it. But mostly it is
Jimmy Butler, obviously high on that list.
Right. He is. Yeah, man. Absolutely. So Jimmy Butler, incredible person. We can tell some Jimmy Butler stories later, but no.
Sorry to derail you.
But a lot of it is also, like you mentioned, I'm just watching a lot and like what stood out to me. I saw something interesting. Can I back that up with stats? Can I back that up with interviews, et cetera? So, you know, it's a mix of a lot of things, but certainly a ton of it is just kind of watching and then seeing like, I noticed that. Is that a thing?
Have you delved into the, one of the fun story? I don't know if it qualifies as a fun story now that I think about it, but in Miami down here, the whole thing with, The evil Jokic brothers versus Markieff Morris and his brother over what went on the court.
Actually, that like, let's put a bookmark right here. I have a surprise for both of you, and I just want to like you know I want to do that real fast before we'll get back to that beef because I actually do want to talk about that with Rohan.
Rohan, where the hell? You get off voting for Greg Cody's pumpkin instead of mine? I have known you much longer. I thought we were friends. I was the first chair on the SI Union that you voted for, and wow. you have the audacity wow. to get on Twitter and vote for Greg's wow. pumpkin.
Yes. Okay. Shot out of a cannon.
Jesus, how did this interloper get in my podcast? Security, where's my podcast sergeant at arms?
Here it is. My good friend, Jess, who I never hear from, apparently, unless it's about a Twitter public poll. This is what it takes to get a face-to-face with Jess Smetana these days, you know?
What are you talking about? You never text me.
You get one national radio oh, wow. gig, and you forget all about your old friends.
That is ridiculous.
You
get one DraftKings.
The DraftKings money hits the direct deposit.
That's right. That's exactly Listen, right.
Friendship is a two-way street, Rohan.
That's true. No, you're right. Listen, it's my fault because once I finished The Americans,
talking to me. You used me as someone to talk to about The Americans, and then you never texted me again.
This is so messed up. Listen, here's the way I look at it. You have a social media just army just waiting at your beck and call. That I was like, someone's got to represent Cody in this poll.
Thank you.
Cody has a social media army at his beck and call. If you anything he tweets, literally anything he tweets, the replies are like, clicking it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, potting it.
Reporting
it. It is interesting.
Greg Cody tweeted an apology for his column a few weeks ago, and all of the replies apologizing it.
Oh, God.
Right.
Regretting it.
Also, in defense of Greg Cody's pumpkin, I thought it was very avant-garde.
Thank you.
There was a knife sticking yes. out of it.
It was a good pumpkin. It just wasn't as good as mine. I was so impressed when you pulled the butcher's knife out. Yeah. Well, it was a steak knife. It wasn't a butcher's knife.
Yeah.
He planned on using a butcher's knife, allegedly. But the pumpkins were very small.
Here's how I describe the difference between the two pumpkins. Yours was technically perfect. Okay. Like no flaws. There's no debating that. Technically perfect.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Go on.
The execution spectacular. No question. Greg's just had a certain je ne sais quoi. I don't know. It just, you
That's
know,
what
you
I was
look
going
at it
for.
And it makes you want to look at it again.
Yes. Thank you.
That's all it was. That's
so kind.
Yeah.
How do you put that over mine then? If mine was technically perfect, mine should win if it's perfect.
Yeah, it was too perfect. Didn't have any soul.
That's true.
Didn't have any soul.
That's right.
That is offensive to Angel Resto, who designed the logo for the Levitard and Friends Podcast Network.
How can you describe why art moves you the way it does?
Right. You know? Exactly.
That's how I ended up with the Greg Cody's pumpkin.
Rohan, I zoned out for a second because I texted our mutual friend Priya and said, hey, I'm about to go barrage Rohan on a podcast. Give me some ammo. And she replied with like, I'm not even kidding, like 15 messages.
No way. Yeah. No way. That's she's no dirt on me. I don't know what she could possibly be.
She said you want to be the speak now or forever hold your peace guy at her wedding.
That's true. I did threaten to object at her wedding.
How much do I have to pay you to actually do that?
Not that much. Like six drinks. Like six mojitos and I'll probably object at any
anyway. Greg, you're experienced with going to a lot of weddings. Have you ever seen someone object at a wedding?
I have not. No, I would love to. I think that would be just a remarkable occurrence.
You'd love to see it. Well, I feel like it would ruin the party. Why would you like to see that? Nothing is good. Nothing good comes after that.
Here's my plan. Okay. And it's something I've used with women several times before in my life is I'm going to object, then read the room. And if it's really awkward, I'm just like, just kidding. Right. But maybe if I object and then
someone else is like, ooh, we didn't want to say it.
Exactly. Then we'll go with the flow. So that's the game plan. Yeah.
I think the play is to clear it first with the bride and groom. Like the only three people in the room who know are the bride and groom and me, that I'm going to be standing up in the next to last pew going, I object, Your Honor, or whoever the hell the judge is. I don't know.
Your Honor.
Yeah, I don't know. Your Honor.
Whatever. Who's officiating this wedding? I don't know. Maybe it's Tony Correnti.
Judge Judy.
I think privately objecting kind of defeats the purpose of then doing it during the ceremony.
No, it's, right. It's the amusement of the gathering.
I see.
To Chris's point, though, like once you object, the open bar, like that's off the table, right?
Yeah, like it's bad for the people involved in the wedding. It's bad for everyone attending the wedding. Like it's just we get it. Keep your thoughts to yourself. There's an open bar in an hour.
That's a fair point. By the way, I want to say one more thing on this pumpkin controversy. I know that
it was close, right? It was close.
What were the final results, Dad? Did you win?
There was
two polls and then a clapping poll, and I think you were over three, right?
So yeah.
Well, listen,
and I see. This is why I had to support the OG.
Yeah, thank you.
You just felt bad, Rohan.
To be technical and accurate, Steve Kornacki has yet to call the result of that poll because the write-in ballots are not all in.
This thing again.
John King called it for me, okay. The CNN guy, whoever his
best
name is.
The best were the replies to Greg's tweet that were like, his voters use vote by mail.
That's right.
Like, his voters aren't on the internet.
Yeah, they use Pony
his
Express.
His voters are going to the polls, yeah.
Which was very popular.
I wanted to tweet stop the count, but I was worried that that would put me on like a weird part of Twitter that
yeah,
I didn't want to be.
You definitely don't want to be on stop the count Twitter.
Exactly. But I am so gratified that I dominated the Instagram poll.
No, you didn't. I won by 10%.
No,
it was 55-45. That's a 10-point win.
I'm talking. No, you're talking about the Twitter poll.
Yeah, Dad.
That I did.
No, I'm talking about Instagram. Ask Juju Gotti. He sent it to me.
I didn't see you in any poll.
Well, I don't acknowledge. I want a recount. I demand a recount. As
Jess,
a matter of fact.
Okay. While you're here, I have something that's been on my mind literally for years that I want to bring up. But let me get to it. Jess, I heard you went to Flanagan's for the first time recently.
I did, yeah, 2 weeks ago.
I still haven't been to Flanny's.
What?
You've never been to Flanny's?
No. Flanny's. I know, it's messed up. It's messed up. We should all go when I'm in Florida.
Yes.
Which will be soon.
Which location do you want to go to? Because I know you guys are you're all Broward people, right?
Anyone. I'll come down. Listen, in all seriousness, I'm in Florida for 2 weeks starting November 18th. We'll all
nice.
Get together.
Let's do it.
Yes. Let's go.
But Chris, I have a question for you.
What's up?
Do you feel like the guy on the Flanagan's logo like kind of looks like your dad?
Oh, I mean, if my dad grew the full beard, because
right?
He doesn't have a beard, he
yes.
has a beard. I mean, the head shape for sure.
I have a Flanagan's hat around here somewhere that I'm like, in my mind, I've always been like, this looks like Greg Cody.
Really?
And a few times.
It does.
Yes.
People on Twitter were saying that after we posted the picture of it to like non-Flanny's people. They were like, is that Greg Cody?
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
I have never been told that in my life.
Oh my
That's
God. Yeah. You kind of look
Joe.
Like the Flanagan's.
It's Papa
guy.
Joe, right, Chris?
Yeah, it is. He's gotten Jeffrey Loria.
Tom Cruise back in the day.
Okay, that's not true.
Yeah, you're back like Stu Gotts with George day. Clooney.
No, I mean, it's true. I should bring on as a guest the person who used to call me Tom Cruise. He's also the guy whose nickname for me was Greg Cutie.
Okay.
Because
do people want to look like Tom Cruise? I feel like he had his heyday like 20 years ago.
I know.
No, Tom Cruise.
My dad's
is
been saying
attractive.
That.
There was a recent picture of him that was not very flattering.
Yeah.
Oh,
it
really?
Sure was.
Okay. Yeah. Norm Donald, McDonald vibes.
Oh.
Yeah. I think he's done the big Botox thing or something. I don't know what's going on.
Well, Rohan, I highly, highly encourage you to go to Flanagan's. Try the ribs. Apparently, the rock and rib roll is also really good. I didn't try that.
Okay.
The wings were excellent. The nachos we did not get. We need to go back together and try the nachos.
All right, perfect. I'll hit you up when soon I'm in Florida. We'll do it. We'll make it happen.
Sounds like a deal.
All right.
Wow. An amicable ending to Jessica's.
And I'll beat your ass at Flanagan's.
Yes.
I'm dumping a beer on your head.
Yes.
You're dead to me.
Pumpkin at me. Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
All right. Well, I'm glad that we cleared that up. I feel like I addressed my side. Listen, Jess, you won fair and square. Congrats.
Thank you for acknowledging that.
Congratulations.
Dad, wait, does Dad acknowledge that?
No,
Greg, that.
No. Greg will never. We're going to have to do it again next year. There's going to be a whole. We're going to have to agree on terms. We didn't even really agree how we were going to decide who won until after we finished carving the pumpkins. Then we were like, so now what?
I know.
What can we do for Thanksgiving? Are we going to have like a Christmas tree decorating contest?
Pie
like, what's
bake
for
off.
Pie bake off?
Ooh, I
Someone
like it.
Someone said a turkey carving competition.
I would
that
do that.
That sounds dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
Let's bake
Greg already
pies.
Brought one knife to work.
Yeah.
What's your pie of choice, Jess? We got to figure out what pie the pie off.
Ooh. I mean, I bake a... I've baked every type of pie, and I really
that
I,
can't be okay, true.
Not there every time, every Thanksgiving type of pie. Okay. I think pumpkin is good, but it's like it's just so simple and easy to make. Yeah. It's not really a challenge. I made a really good hybrid pecan pie. It was like a pecan pumpkin pie one year.
Oh,
that was really interesting. I liked that a lot. And last year I made a pumpkin tahini mousse pie.
Oh, that sounds
which
really
was
good.
Really good. I'm addicted to tahini. I eat it by the spoonful.
Yeah.
Put it on everything. That was really good. But the one thing that happened was you were supposed to like crush up Oreos to make the crust, but I couldn't find gluten-free Oreos, so I had to make my own chocolate shortbread cookies.
Wow.
So it took like an extra like 6 hours to make, and it was worth it. It was so good. Highly recommend.
Jess, I'm actually definitely going to be in touch because I'm baking a pie for the first time in my life this Thanksgiving. So I'll be in touch for sure. I'm going to need help.
Were you assigned that for your Thanksgiving? Like you're like, hey,
I like to take on a new project. I get to just go all out for Thanksgiving. I call for the ISO on the block. Everyone's out of the kitchen.
Really?
Yeah, I cook the entire meal almost. My mom definitely helps. She likes to help.
That's awesome.
What happens is I come up with a menu, then she's like, "You're doing too much work," so then she helps prep. But I like to do most of the
I things. Do have one baking tip for Rohan since he's a novice baker. The higher the oven temperature, the better. What you want to do is you want to bake it like 500 degrees for a long period of time, so you make sure it's done.
Okay, right. You don't want to undercook apple pie.
That's right.
Good one, Dad.
You want that shit crispy and charred.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Might as well put it on the grill.
The Maillard reaction. Yes, you need it for an apple pie.
You know what? That's not a bad idea. Grilled. Hi.
You know what? I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued.
Exactly. Jess, I can't thank you enough
thank
for
you,
coming
Jess.
By the podcast. This has been fantastic.
Yeah, Jess, genuinely, it was so good to see your face. Oh my God, this was lovely. Thank you.
I miss you, Rohan.
Yeah, I miss you too. I'll hit you up when I'm in Florida. We'll get together.
I always have tricks up my sleeve.
Yeah, shout out to producer Chris.
Yes.
That is great producing. That is outstanding.
It really is.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Jess.
Bye.
All right, tell us about the Jokic and Marcus Morris beef. No, I'm just kidding.
Boy, that came out of nowhere.
More. What's your reaction to that? Yeah. Look at that.
That was great. That was so fun. Honestly, we missed Jess at SI, but she's killing it. I mean, this is it. I'm so glad. I feel like she's found the right home for her.
Yeah, you know what? This is stupid on my part. It didn't even occur to me that you two were SI stablemates.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even think of that. But she's really fitting well with the Levitard show, and I mean that. I think the audience has really embraced her and I think
sure.
she fits in well. I mean, I think it's great.
It's very strange for me because once again, you know, I've listened to the show for like over a decade. My brother who like still listens to the show like religiously, he's like, "Oh, so like you know Jess?" I'm like, "Yeah." Like it's very cool. It's very fun to see.
And she gets put in tough spots where it's like, "Speak for all women."
Yes.
On this topic. Yes. And it's like, okay, right. Now everyone on Twitter is going to be real nice about this. So right. Like
everyone in the boxes is looking at her. Like,
right. Yeah. But she's done really well. I wanted to ask you one thing before we let you go, Rohan, about the Heat. I was sort of iffy on the Kyle Lowry signing. I know that he was like maybe arguably the big free agent this past summer, but you know, I saw him as
What does it look like when you're iffy? You're just like,
I'm making this kind of a sound. You know, because to me he's, you know, 3-4 seasons past his prime. I just wondered what he had to give and how he was going to fit in. And I wonder what your early thoughts are on how that's transpired.
I mean, I think he's had a huge impact, Greg. I mean, I don't want to necessarily bore everyone on your podcast to death with, you know, statistics and whatnot, but basically the Heat have always been one of the slowest playing teams in the league under Eric Spoelstra. When Kyle Lowry's on the floor, they play way faster than they've ever played before. And what that means is they're shooting earlier in the shot clock. They're generating more possessions for themselves. And that's really important. You know, if there's one, I think, big concern, you know, that Heat fans should have about this team, if you're wondering, can they compete for a championship, et cetera. In the playoffs, games typically slow down quite a bit. And your half-court offense becomes a lot more important. Right now, the Heat's half-court offense for the first 12 games of the season or so, struggling a lot. So that's an area of concern. And what Kyle Lowry does is he allows them to play more in the open court and less in the half court. So even, you know, he had a big scoring night against the Clippers on Thursday night, but even if he's not scoring, I think what he does in terms of getting Bam Adebayo easy shots inside the paint, getting Jimmy Butler easy shots inside the paint, he's having a huge impact in a way that doesn't necessarily reflect itself on the traditional box score.
To that point, he helps, like, Goran Dragic didn't get over any screens, and Bam was always having to come out and, like, you know, help defensively. Now he gets over screens, and then Bam can kind of just sit back and hopefully be the defensive player of the
year. For sure. Big impact on their defense.
What's the NBA storyline that is of most interest to you right now? I know a lot of people are looking at the LA Lakers' early struggles, and that's fascinating whenever you see.
Are we just literally starting? Is LeBron finally human? Like, is this the first season where we're all saying to ourselves, okay, it's starting to happen?
That's really what it feels like. And especially, you know, I live in Los Angeles.
Maybe you should write that. That'd be a cool thing. You should be the first one to say
it. I'd love to be the person to throw dirt on LeBron. Yeah, that'd be really good for
it, I want the headline to be, it's starting to happen.
Here's, you know, especially living in Los Angeles, like I mentioned, I'm so sensitive to it. You know, I see it every day. The Lakers are definitely an incredible just kind of experiment. I do think last year in the playoffs was the first time I thought to myself when Giannis had that 50-point game in the finals or Durant had that 50-point game seven. I remember thinking to myself, could LeBron still do this on this level? Like, I think he can control a game, but can he score 50 on a night I need my best player to score 50? I will say, for me, the most interesting storyline is, in fact, the Warriors. They have the best net rating in the league. They don't have Klay Thompson back yet. I was really high on them going into the season, not to pat myself on the back, but to me, there's something like poetic and like narratively beautiful about a team. I'm comparing them to, they're like Arnold in Terminator 2. You know, in the first, their first go around, it was like everyone was terrified of these people. And now all of a sudden they're like the good guy. You know what I mean? They're coming back and it's like, whoa, this team's like lovable and fun again. And they're a little older. They're not this, they're not the new sexy model. They're not the liquid metal. But to me, there's something really cool about that team getting the gang back together and going for broke one last time.
Dad, you haven't seen Terminator 2, have you?
No.
You haven't seen Terminator 2?
No, when did that come out?
Oh, dude. We have a movie segment on this podcast. It's Greg Doesn't Know Movies, where we just ask my dad obvious questions.
That's like not even from my time. Like my dad was like, you have to watch Terminator 2. This movie's incredible. And I was like 8 years old and I was scared out of my mind. I was like, Terminator could beat up my dad tonight and there's nothing we could do about it. Like Terminator 2 was like the biggest deal ever when it happened. I can't believe you didn't see it.
I don't think I've seen a sequel since Godfather 2. I'm being serious.
Okay, that's cool.
We got our cold open.
Yeah, actually, that's cool.
And it was a good sequel too, by the way.
Yeah.
By the way, how do we feel about Godfather 2 was the number 2, but most of the sequels are the 2, like a Roman numeral 2.
Is that true?
No, that's not true at all.
I think Godfather 2 was a Roman numeral.
Are you sure?
And I think most movies are just 2. Like it's
Terminator 2 was the number 2.
Oh, so I mixed it up.
Yeah, well, you got that completely backwards.
You might have mixed that up. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, but is that a controversy within the sequel industry? the Roman numeral versus the number?
You had such a cool thing where you're like, I haven't seen a sequel since Godfather 2. And then you rebounded that with like saying something, one of the most nonsensical stuff I've ever heard said.
You know what? I have thick shoulders or whatever that expression is for criticism. You make fun of me for not being a rock, paper, scissors aficionado. I'll come right back at you.
Wait, you don't know the rules of rock, paper, scissors?
We taught him rock, paper, scissors like 4 days ago.
Yeah, I was not really into that.
He was aware that there was a game called rock, paper, scissors, but we had to explain to him how it was played and which things beat which.
Yeah, that's a screwball system that somebody invented.
Did you retain any of that, Dad? What beats what in rock, paper, scissors?
Well, I did retain it, but I object to it. I don't acknowledge it. Quick example. You tell me that paper beats a rock, and there's no logic to that whatsoever. If I give you a sheet of notebook paper,
it wraps it up. Yeah, you, I just and wrap up your rock. Now what do you
I'll throw
do?
That rock right through your paper.
Yeah, but the impact.
The rock's by itself. Yeah, the rock's by itself.
Somebody's got to throw
the impact
it.
Is, the impact is deadened by my protective piece of paper.
That is true, but without the human, a rock is not a lot without a human.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Okay, what's a paper doing by itself?
It's just a thing. It has its respect.
You know what it does? Paper does. All it's good for is giving you a paper cut. That's all paper's good for. We don't even use paper anymore.
You write for a newspaper.
I'm not writing longhand on a sheet of notebook paper.
You still had a deadline. You had a deadline the other day.
I'm still getting the ink on my fingers, you know?
I did have a deadline, yeah.
You know, can I ask you a question, Cody?
Yeah.
I'm curious for both of you, because you guys have been at this show for a long time, and you've seen it grow into this, like, behemoth with a crazy fan base to the point where, like, Lebertard always used to talk about, you don't leave ESPN and give up a platform to doing that exact thing, right? Because of how devoted your fan base is. And, you know, I truly cannot believe, as someone who used to listen to the local show, not because it wasn't great, but I would have never imagined 10 years ago, 11 years ago, that it becoming this.
It is crazy.
What's it like serving this now that it's still a specific audience, but it's so much bigger than it's ever been. I'm just curious what it's like to how you guys feel the responsibilities have changed going from what it used to be to what it is now.
Well, it's like, you know, as you know, somebody low on the totem pole, is it good to be, you want to be high on a totem pole or low on, anyways, I'm low in the pecking order. And, but to me, it's basically like, it's a balance, right? Because you want to like serve your diehard audience, but you also want to like, you know, do things outside of the box and like expand the audience. So it's like, it's been, you know, luckily I can just kind of spackle on the content. Like Dan's the one that's like, I got to drive this conversation, but it's definitely a challenge. Cause like, you know, our diehard fans, like, you know, you add people to the show and like you add me to the show, even from what it used to be, like, you know, the show's evolved over the years. So it's, you know, the diehard stuck with us, but it's Dad, what's your perception of all that?
Lebertard had a fan event a couple of weeks ago that, in fact, we played a snippet from it in the previous podcast. And going to a Lebertard Show fan event is unlike anything I've ever experienced in my life, because those fans are such devotees of the show and everything about the show that they make us feel like rock stars. You know, they wait.
There should never be a line of 50 people waiting to take a picture with
it's
me.
It's crazy.
Right? And it happens at this
it's
event.
It's just insane. And they are so thrilled to meet us. You know, it's a mind blower. And I never get used to it because I'm a columnist. I'm not used to being recognized. My sig in the paper is the size of a postage stamp. Nobody, you know, but because of the Lebertard show, it's like crazy. It's insane.
No, I mean, listen, you guys have earned it. I've never been in Florida for a Moss Miami event. And it's like, it's high on my list. That's great. I think that's so cool. I mean, listen, I was one of those fans like way back in the day. Like, it's funny. I just, you know, as a function of like work and, you know, I don't get to listen to the show as often anymore, but it's like, if you miss a couple episodes, you miss so many inside jokes. And that's such a beautiful part of what you guys have cultivated, is the show has its own language. It has its own vocabulary. And like, I feel like everyone gets to be such a part of it, which is very cool.
Yeah. That the whole thing you're talking about, there's a linear quality to the show where you're right. If you miss a chunk, you feel like you've missed something, and it's embodied in the phrase, you don't get the show. You're either in on it and part of that family, or you're not, which is terrific. Rohan, we're going to let you go. Really appreciate catching up with you. And you said you're going to be in town a couple of weeks. Let's get together for sure.
Absolutely. This did we even record a podcast yet? Like, I feel like we've just been catching up this whole time.
That's all it is.
That's how we roll around here, baby. Always recording.
That's right. It's painless that way. That way I'm not firing questions rat at that set.
We still haven't introduced you.
They'll figure it out. We'll let people guess who has been the guest on this show without naming them once. That'll be an experiment. No, seriously, thanks a lot, buddy. Appreciate it.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, that was a lot of fun with Rohan Nadkarni, my young old friend. And
I cannot believe that he didn't ever like cigars and was just trying to, you know, get his foot in the door with the high ups.
I want Greg Cody to think I'm cool.
You know? I'm so desperate to hang out with Greg Cody that I will pretend that I like cigars. That is, I mean, you're an impressive guy, I guess.
You know what? I didn't know it back then because he faked it well. It's not like he was puffing a cigar and like hacking and coughing like an amateur.
Yeah.
He faked it well, so.
I love the idea of Greg being like the older guy around the neighborhood or around the Herald that like gets all the kids, that like offers them their first cigarette or right. their first, you know, first look at a nudie magazine or something. Yeah, like
that's you, right.
What bad habit did you turn Dave Hyde to the first time you met him?
I corrupt everyone I meet. That's the problem with me. Or the benefit to me, depending on your point of view. But Rohan Nadkarni, the Prince of Mumbai, that was just a fantastic reacquainting with him, a conversation. I really enjoyed that. Why is my voice crazy right now? It sounds terrible in my ear.
And you did so much good talking with Rohan that you're like tapped out. You're just like, I got nothing left.
I think that's it. I think that's exactly right. You know what? We can't.
Have you drank any water today? You sound like a man that hasn't had any water today.
I sound like a man in a desert who's parched and dying of thirst. No, I haven't, other than when I took my pills this morning.
There you go.
But I want to say before we get out of this podcast that I have to take a victory lap with Tua. I know we mentioned the Dolphins a little bit earlier, their big Thursday win. I just have to take a victory lap because the whole thing could blow up on me. I have no idea if he's going to turn out to be a great quarterback. But right now, it looks like Greg Cody is 100% right in backing Tua and saying it's way too early to give up on this guy. He comes off the bench.
Greg Cody was right. He's better than Jacoby Brissett.
One week after padding it and trying to step away from Tua, trying to distance himself.
Yeah, you were looking for an exit ramp last week.
No, the exit ramp was injuries. Tua proved that when he's healthy, and he wasn't even healthy. He wasn't even healthy.
Right. Wow, Dad. I mean, this is the saddest victory lap I've ever seen. Jim Leland took a victory lap after guiding the 1997 Marlins to a World Series victory.
Right. Okay,
victory laps are not had after beating the Ravens on Thursday Night Football. Right. Okay. This is a far too early victory lap for you.
Jim Leland, by the way, the last active manager in Major League Baseball to smoke cigarettes during a game.
And he still sounds better than you do.
He does. I feel I sound like I've been smoking 3 packs a day for the last 2 days. My voice just sounds terrible.
I hope you sounded better on the sideline of this Thursday night game. Are you going to tell we have Hard Knocks coming up right here. Are you going to tell the audience, like, you know, what you were able to do? Don't give it too much away because, you know, the episode speaks for itself, right. But it was pretty cool.
Okay. I will just say Greg's Lobos are balling the jack toward the ship. I'll just say that.
What does that mean?
But listen, we had a fantastic Hard Knocks. I was on the sideline at Hard Rock Stadium cheering on L Jack and, you know, Harbaugh and I get into a little bit of a beef, but we'll just listen to it because it's worth hearing.
You'd think that being Greg Cody, you'd just be able to be on the sideline. So you needed L Jack to get you onto the sideline, huh?
Oh, yeah. Normally I'm confined to the press box during the game. The sideline is sacrosanct, you know, unless you're part of the team party or part of the network covering
or a fantasy owner
or a fantasy owner,
a phoner
with the, you know, the blessing of L Jack, then I was on there. But
I'm going to sell you out. You were on the as you'll hear in this episode of Hard Knocks, you were on the Ravens sideline.
Yeah, well, that's true.
I know.
Not very fair.
That made me feel a little guilty.
Yeah, it's not very journalistic of you.
I know, it made me feel guilty, but I had my owner's hat on. I'm there right, as the Lobos owner.
So let's throw it to Hard Knocks right here. Why don't you go get some water, and on the way back, you're going to sound a little better.
Sounds great.
Hard Rock Stadium, Thursday, November 11th. Faced with a clear conflict of interest, Greg must choose between fantasy and reality as his hometown Dolphins are pitted against Greg's Lobos star player, Lamar Jackson.
All right, this is really strange. It's Thursday evening at Hard Rock Stadium, and I'm wearing two hats tonight. Obviously, I'm here with the Miami Herald to write a column on the Dolphins-Ravens game, but right now I got my owner's hat on. I am here as the owner, CEO, head coach, and director of football operations for Greg's Lobos, and LJack, my quarterback, Lamar Jackson, got me a sideline pass, and I tell you, the game hadn't started yet. It's close, but I am really have high hopes today for LJack against this Dolphins defense. I hope no Miami fans are hearing me right now, but I think Lamar could ring up 40, and I mean points on the scoreboard, and I mean points for the Bows. Okay, I'm looking for a huge game tonight. Running and passing, it's going to be delightful. Anyway, let's see how it goes, but I'm excited, man. Okay, here we go. Let's strap it up. All right, it's early in the third quarter now. To say I'm pissed, it's crazy. I don't know if Lamar's got 10 points yet. It's insane. They're getting their ass kicked. They're not protecting him. LJack's running for his life back there. It's like having five broken condoms out there trying to protect them. It's absolutely ridiculous. But I gotta. Let me get. Harbaugh! Air it out, man! Jesus Christ. Wait a minute. Hang on. Security guard coming at me. Hang on a second.
Sir, you're gonna have to step away from the sideline immediately.
Okay. I'm sorry. I won't yell at the head coach anymore.
Thank you.
It's just that Lamar Jackson's not
Sir,
even...
Sir, you can walk away on your own or with my shoe up your ass, and I'll leave that choice up to you.
All right, I get it. I'll tell you one thing right now. Heads at Lobo's headquarters are going to be rolling Monday morning if I get the same performance Sunday that I just got from Lamar. I love LJack like a son, but we can't have this. This is a high-rolling season. We're bound for the playoffs. We want to captain that ship, and I mean that championship. And we can't put up with a 14-point performance from our QB1. Heads may be rolling. How do I sound any better?
Oh, God.
It no. might be worse.
It's even worse. Terrible. Spit all the water out. Spit it all out.
It just proves water is not the panacea, okay? I mean, I am what I am.
It proves you need a doctor.
Doctor my eyes, Jackson Brown. He did not play that song at that. We saw your mother and I saw James Taylor and Jackson Brown in concert. And he did not play Doctor My Eyes.
We're recording this on Sunday. Was this Saturday night?
I can't even remember.
It was earlier in the week.
Yeah. It was earlier in the week. Yeah, it was like midweek.
Okay. I was thinking that's what your voice was doing right now. Like you just were after a late night, maybe.
No, I don't have that excuse. This is my natural voice. But shout out to JT and Jay Brown. It was a fantastic concert. Really good. Kick the ass of the monkeys. I mean, it was just fantastic.
Well, I'd hope so. What's the age demo there? Like, are you right in the middle? Are you a young whippersnapper there? What's the deal?
I would say I'm right in the middle. It's the demographic is old and white. Old versus white to see the king of that demographic.
Yeah, because James Taylor is like 76, 77 now, something like that.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
His voice is still great, though. He's great live. We've seen him before. I had never seen Jackson Browne before, so that was kind of cool. And Jackson Browne, not a lot of people know, he wrote a lot of the Eagles hits way back in the day, including what's it called? Shit, cut this out.
Not doing it. So this was like, was this like a play? Was this like a lawn type of concert, or was this like seating? Was there like, you know, what kind of concert was this?
No, it was indoor. It was a regular concert.
So what's your strategy on?
Take It Easy, by the way, was a song. I went Winslow, Arizona.
So what's your strategy on like standing versus sitting, or do you stand for the hits? Like, do you care if people stand in front of you? Like, what's
how you know what? I don't want to be told when to stand. It's the same way at the football game where you see the guy going like this and raising his arms, like just because he's standing, everybody else should stand. At a concert, I'm a stand when I want to stand. Don't exhort me to stand. If the song, if the concert moves me, I'm going to stand, wiggle my hips. But if not, I'm going
to
sit.
Okay, but what about if the person in front of you happens to be just one of the entire, they're just one of the people that wants to stand the entire time. Are you cool with that?
Not really. No, I'm not.
So it's just stand whenever Greg Cody wants to stand, but the person in front of me needs to stand when I want them to stand.
Well, see, I'm a polite person.
Oh, God.
Okay. Like, I'm not the person who leans back in the airline seat, and I'm not the person who stands if I'm the only one standing. Now, if the people in right in the row behind me are standing, I feel sanctioned to then stand.
But you just said 5 seconds before this that I'm going to stand when I want to stand.
Yeah, but politely. I'm not going to ruin anyone else's experience. Like, we had somebody at the James Taylor concert the other night. We had one of these people, I think it was two couples on a double date or something, totally chatty during the concert, like constantly talking to each other over songs. You know, and it's just very annoying because I'm like looking over my shoulder, trying to give them the evil eye and all that stuff. So didn't work.
What does that look like? What does that evil eye look like? Just kind of like you're squinting.
It's just like the long glance.
Evil eye the camera right now.
Except I'm not smiling. Oh, man. No, that was fun, though. It was a great concert.
All right, let's get out of here. You have to go to sleep.
We are going
to
get out of here. I got to make a meal is what I got to do. Hey, thank you for Rohan Nadkarni. That was great. And thanks, as always, mostly to our podcast family. You all listening every week really thrills me, gratifies me. Keep doing it. And we'll see you all next week.
Once again, Greg Cody has failed to recognize Jessica Smetana.
Oh, yeah.
And others.
I totally forgot she photobombed, pod-bombed our telecast.
And others that joined the show.